With the first pick in the 2007 NFL Draft, the Oakland Raiders select quarterback Jamarcus Russell, LSU.
And here we go.
What is up, NFP? This is Wes Bunning, the Director of College Scouting here at the National Football Post. You are listening to another installment of Draft Talk. We are up to version 16.0, and we have a very awesome guest this week, Brad Evans, the Yahoo Sports Fantasy Analysis. Brad, how things going?
Fantastic. How are things going with you, Wes?
Oh, it's that time of the year, Christmas in January. Draft's right around the corner. You know, we're looking forward to that, and the combine's coming up. What better time of year?
Yeah, I'm sure you're eyeball deep in film right now, trying to break down all these prospects, right?
Oh, without a doubt. And, you know, a lot of people come up and they think, you know, this must be your really busy time of year where you have to work hard. You know, believe it or not, and I'm sure you get this in the fantasy world as well, you work hard all year long. It's just people only want to talk to you between January to April if you're an NFL expert or draft expert.
Yeah, that's definitely the case. There's no doubt about it. You know, my busy time of the year being a fantasy guy is, of course, during the regular season, of course, also leading up to draft season. So August is just hellacious for me. But this time of the year, it's more downtime. You know, you do get on YouTube, you try to look as much film as possible, break guys down, look at some old game film, see what's available out there, and see how the landscape will lay out come April with the NFL draft, which really gets people's juices flowing going into the next year. So, you know, now the Super Bowl's wrapped up, I cannot wait for April.
Oh, without a doubt. And one of my favorite things about this draft podcast is that we try to look outside the box. And I love having fantasy guys like you on, Brad. I had Cecil Lammy from Football Guys on before, because you look at this at such a unique perspective. I love getting different perspectives from everyone. So we're going to look at three skill guys today, and most likely the most hotly debated skill position player in this year's NFL draft would be none other than Baylor's Robert Griffin III, the quarterback there. So initial impressions that you've seen from Robert Griffin III and where you see him going forward as of, you know, in the beginning of February 2012.
Well, I think Robert Griffin III, and again, I'm taking this from a fantasy perspective, mm-hmm. He's probably going to be the closest thing to Cam Newton next season. You know, this is a guy that's a complete package in my mind. He's incredibly intelligent, a guy that's a quick study. An incredibly gifted athlete overall. You know, he's a guy that can tuck it and run when he's feeling the pressure. He's got a laser arm, very accurate as well, completed over 70% of his passes at Baylor this season, and a guy that also, you know, chipped in 10 rushing touchdowns on the ground. And for a fantasy guy, that is the most mouth-watering statistic imaginable, a guy that can score you across the board. You know, Cam Newton was a monster, a guy that was really an unpredictable beast this season in fantasy land. You know, admittedly, I said you didn't want to touch him. I thought he'd be a work in progress. I thought it was more mental for Cam Newton. I knew the physical tools were there, but I thought the progressions and reads would take some time for him at the next level. You know, but credit to Ron Rivera and the Carolina staff. You know, he came up with a great game plan. He came in immediately, was very successful in that first week against Arizona, and continued to ride that throughout the entire year. So I think RG3, if he comes into the right situation, and that's the biggest key in fantasy, and really reality as well, is taking, you know, the most of an opportunity. You know, maybe RG3 goes to Cleveland, or maybe somebody trades up for him, maybe Washington, for example. You know, Washington would be a much more nourishing offense environment. I think there are better tools there at his disposal and weapons immediately. But Cleveland's no slouch either. I know the offensive line had some issues last year, but there's still some pretty good talent there. You got Greg Little. He's got a season under his belt, his final year in North Carolina. I think he's a kid that could really, you know, take that next step forward in the maturation process and be that stud wideout target for RG3. And, of course, you know, the Browns got another pick in round one. Wouldn't it be something if they got Kendall Wright as well? They get two Baylor guys on the same team at the same time. So I'm looking at RG3 as one of those guys that's probably going to go in rounds 8 through 10 in standard, 12-team drafts next year. And I think he'll greatly exceed expectation because he can score and beat you in a variety of ways.
Yeah, a couple of things I'd like that you brought up, Brad. The first is we get into these stereotypes of these athletic quarterbacks that they want to put their head down, they want to flush outside the pocket and simply create with his legs. I would say Robert Griffin III, when he came to Baylor, more athlete than quarterback, but this is a bright guy, like you said, good disciplined kid who's put in the work Monday, Tuesday, and Wednesday so he can win football games for you on Saturday and Sunday, comes from a good family, both military parents, and overall, I just think when you match his physical talents with his mental capabilities and the development that's taken place, is he there yet? Absolutely not. You watch his footwork, gets a bit upright in the pocket, but you see a guy with quick footwork that can reset his feet quickly, that can find secondary reads. And in the NFL now, with the talent that they have on the defensive side of the football, those defensive linemen, they're going to win their one-on-one matchups. Do you have a quarterback that, one, can buy secondary lives or time inside the pocket when flushed and create when plays break down? And secondly, decipher information quickly, because at times you're going to have to find that hot man, you're going to have to check down, you have to get the ball out of your hands quickly. And I think that's two of the things that as a quarterback, that's not something that's taught, that's just that instinctive, that natural awareness, that feel that you have to your game. And I think Griffin has that. Then you touched on his ability when he does create outside the pocket. The touch vertically down the field where he can drop those bucket throws into tiny windows, which he did consistently to Kendall Wright. So you get a guy that, one, plays break down. He can buy time and create outside the pocket, but still kill you over the top with those big plays where, not only as a fantasy guy, but as an NFL franchise, you're loving that, because when plays break down and you're saying, oh, man, we got to look to the next play, you got a guy that can give you that second life and still hit that big play for you. With the talent on the defensive side of the ball, big plays are what's in right now in the NFL. And I think outside of Andrew Luck, Robert Griffin III gives you more of that potential at the quarterback position than anyone else.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. One other thing to keep in consideration, too, let's say he lands in Cleveland, all right? Now, that secondary's strong, obviously. You know, they've got the talent there with Joe Hayden, one of the better corners in the league, according to several metrics out there that measure, you know, how stout a guy is in terms of overall coverage. But, you know, the defensive line has got major issues. So you look at Cleveland, could give up a ton of points potentially, you know, especially if they do not remedy their situation up front there defensively. Maybe Griffin gets involved in more shootouts. And again, from a fantasy perspective, it's just so tantalizing that he could go to a franchise that has a subpar defense that could give up, you know, upwards of 20 points a game. And maybe he has to play from behind often, and that then builds on his statistical prowess in the virtual game. So, you know, that to me is just another enticing piece of the RG3 puzzle, and another reason why I'm banking on him as a guy who's going to greatly exceed his average draft position next season. But, yeah, I agree with your perspective there. I think he's a very sound quarterback across the board. The only thing I worry about with him, and we saw this in the Alamo Bowl, even though there was very little defense played, is when, you know, Washington Husky defenders are able to put pressure on the pocket. It seemed like his awareness was a little bit shifty at times. It wasn't exactly as good and as precise to his beat. He wasn't feeling it. You know, he wasn't doing a Blaine Gabbert impersonation, don't get me wrong, but I thought at times his pocket awareness wasn't the greatest, and that's something he'll have to work on, especially with the speed of the next level of the defenders he's going to be facing. But other than that, I think he's a real gem and really almost a can't-miss prospect.
Yeah, that without a doubt, there are some flaws to his game. We talked about the footwork. He'll get a bit upright in the pocket. And I think that has to do with, you know, is he 6'1", is he 6'2"? I'd say he's probably 6'1.5", 6'1.25". Needs to see over the line of scrimmage consistently. And again, in that offense where he's from the gun consistently, I think he certainly has the balance, the footwork, the coordination to take snaps from under center. But it's a limited read offense. There's times where he'll find secondary receivers, but for the most part, he's a one read, one side of the read field guy who consistently isn't asked to work his way across the field. And I think when he gets more comfortable with that and he's going to put in the time, he certainly can develop in that area because he's a good, smart kid. But like any quarterback, there's always weaknesses to the game, and that's just something you have to deal with Robert Griffin III. Moving on. Next guy we're going to talk about, Oklahoma State wide receiver Justin Blackmon. I was talking to a couple scouts today, compared him to a hybrid between Anquan Boldin and a T.O. I think he's a little more Anquan Boldin than T.O., but those long arms, his ability to win in jump ball situations, plus he's a coordinated route runner, lacks ideal top-end speed, but I think this guy can still be pretty effective pretty early on in his NFL career.
Yeah, I completely agree, and I think it's spot on what the scouts are saying, that, you know, that cross between a Terrell Owens and an Anquan Boldin. And I side with you, too. I think he's definitely more Anquan Boldin. Just a physical specimen he is, a guy that's incredibly strong, brutishly strong, and he's going to be a yards-after-contact monster at the next level. There's no doubt in my mind. You know, you saw what he did this year at Oklahoma State, 121 receptions, over 1,500 yards. Touchdowns, and more impressively was his game in the Fiesta Bowl against Stanford, playing with a thigh infection, mind you, and he still catches 8 balls for 186 yards and 3 touchdowns, was virtually unstoppable in that contest. So that to me is what's really tantalizing and exciting about Justin Blackmon. Now it depends upon his situation, and that's what we're all about in fantasy, is where is that opportunity going to be for him? You know, he's going to be a starter wherever he goes, but is it going to be in St. Louis? You know, at the Rams at number 2, are they going to trade down? Are they going to remain in that slot? You know, you love Sam Bradford's potential there, but the offensive line definitely has its issues. There's no doubt about it. They could look at offensive tackle there with the first pick and maybe bypass on a Blackmon. Now, ultimately, I think that'd be a very nice landing spot there with Jeff Fisher now in tow, calling the shots there in the Lou. I think Blackmon and Bradford could establish a beautiful relationship almost immediately. You know, I think Bradford throws a pretty good deep ball. I think Blackmon, even though he doesn't have the greatest straight line speed, because of his physicality off the line, his ability to create separation in space, I think we'll be able to, you know, reel in a lot of those passes, get underneath them, and be that force that A.J. Green and Julio Jones were in their rookie seasons this year. So, yeah, I think he's the best receiver on the board. I think he's a really interesting overall selection. I'm really curious to see where he's going to land. And I am praying, Wes, I am praying that he's not in Jacksonville with Blaine Gabbert throwing wounded ducks his general direction. That's assuming, of course, Gabbert can actually get the ball off, because, you know, he couldn't feel an ogre, you know, stopping him from 5 feet behind him because his awareness is so awful. So I'll be really curious to see where Blackmon goes, but right now I am hoping and praying that it's St. Louis and not Jacksonville.
Yeah, I think when I look at the overall draft board and the teams that are picking high, I think Blackmon ultimately goes before A.J. Green did last year. But when I look at A.J. Green and Julio Jones, I'd say those are top-tier NFL prospects when you're looking at the wide receiver position in the same class, in my opinion, as a Fitzgerald, as an Andre Johnson. I expect both of them to become those elite receivers in the NFL. When I look at Blackmon, and this is nothing against Blackmon, I'd say you look at that lacking great straight line speed, I'd say he's just a tier below them, but he's still a guy who can work the three-step game. Like you said, he creates after the catch. He can beat press coverage, which is one of the biggest reasons why college receivers fail at the next level, because no one presses him off the line. He can be physical off the line. I think you can play him as the X, split out. I think you can play him on the strong side as a Z. I think you can play him in the slot because he's a coordinated route runner. And if you want him to get vertically down the field, he's got the power to shrug off corners, and he does a great job in jump ball situations. So overall, I expect him to be very productive early on because of his ability to create after the catch underneath. And I think as he develops more and more as a route runner going forward, yeah, I think he can be certainly a top 10 receiver in the NFL, maybe one of those top 5 guys, but I just think he's just a tier below the A.J. Greens and Julio Joneses of the world.
Yeah, I think maybe talent-wise he is, but, you know, again, from a fantasy perspective, you know, both those guys were top 20 wideouts on a per-game basis this past season, and I think that's really the ceiling for Blackmon in his inaugural campaign.
Mm-hmm.
You know, again, it's all about the situation. You know, if he's in St. Louis, I think, you know, he's probably going to be a top 20 fantasy wideout come year's end. If he's in Jacksonville, you know, it's a dicier situation overall. He may only be a fringe top 30 guy, so it just really kind of depends where he ends up. But definitely he's a guy I think will exceed his average draft position in fantasy drafts next season. And I think he's very capable of, you know, matching the production that Jones and Green had this past year.
Fair enough. I like it. The fantasy perspective mixed in with the draft coverage, I'm digging it. Last guy we're going to talk about, Brad, and this is one guy who you brought up, wanted to talk about a bit under the radar, and you can check out at the NFP, this is a shameless plug, our all underrated team that went out this afternoon, Sure enough, the running back on the all-underrated team is none other than Utah State's Robert Turbin. Brad, what was the reason, or why do you want to talk about Robert Turbin so much?
Well, I think Robert Turbin is just kind of one of those diamonds in the rough. You know, a lot of people haven't seen him on a national scale just because he played in the WAC at Utah State, a small school. But you look at the numbers that he's put up. Now, I know he had some injury concerns in the past. Durability is a bit worrisome for him at the next level, but he is a very well-put-together running back, a guy that is incredibly strong, Herculean power in his upper body. I think him and Trent Richardson are kind of side by side in that category. You know, he's 5'9", 220 pounds. He can bowl over people on a regular basis. Strong yards after contact numbers at the collegiate level. Averaged over 6 yards per carry in 2011. Totaled 1,500 yards on the ground. Chipped in an additional 170 receiving. Scored a ton. Now, you know, he's not going to have that high gear. You know, get in the open space, open field. He's not going to blow people away and outrun your typical linebacker defender. But he doesn't necessarily have to, you know. He's a guy, I think, if he finds a zone blocking scheme, goes into a one-cut-and-go system, I think he'd be very effective. You know, you look at guys like Arian Foster, who have thrived in that same system. And Arian Foster was a guy who went, and according to the advisory board, he was like a second or third round label, but didn't get drafted because of injury concerns and, of course, the devastating case of fumbleitis that he had at Tennessee. But Turbin is kind of a similar back, a guy who's got a little bit of wiggle. I think he can, again, just run over people on a regular basis, get those tough yards, could be a force inside the five as a goal line gremlin. And, of course, from a fantasy perspective, it's all about touchdowns in many situations. And he's also good hands out of the backfield as well, can catch a few balls. And I think he's built for a rigorous workload. So it'll be interesting to see where he goes. You know, a lot of people are projecting round 3, maybe round 4 he could slip. But again, in the right situation where he could come in and be a guy that can compete immediately for touches. And I know it's a timeshare era, but I think he's a guy that could definitely be an outside candidate. And again, the right situation to score between 6 and 8 touchdowns in an initial campaign and be a nice bench fantasy running back for those virtual owners out there.
Yeah, I love the analysis, Brad. And the one thing that you brought up that I'm kind of surprised you did bring up was his – we're looking at a big physical back. You said that Herculean type guy. When I look at his physical stature, I see a guy like Marion Barber. I see a guy like Beast Mode. I see a guy like Sean Green. You're thinking, well, this is a guy that's going to be a perfect fit for an angle scheme or a power scheme, like they call it. But you watch him when he's asked to press the edge, put his foot in the ground and get up the field as a zone guy, much more comfortable when he's asked to get out toward the perimeter. He's got a good feel going along the line of scrimmage. And then you talk about that one-cut ability for a bigger back, squares his shoulders quickly, and then accelerates well. Now, is he a 4-4 guy? Absolutely not. But I think he plays quick and he plays fast in tight areas. And his ability to accelerate quickly and break tackles is one of the reasons why I think you can see a guy break some longer runs in the NFL. And one of the biggest misconceptions with running backs in the NFL is that it takes elite straight line speed to create big plays. And, you know, I remember, I'm not the fantasy guy, but I remember when Larry Johnson was in his heyday, that guy broke, I think, more 20-plus yard runs than any running back in the NFL, not because he had great straight line speed, but he had the ability to make a man miss and or break a tackle at that first level and accelerate quickly. And I think that's what Turbin does so well. I think he's a guy, much like Beast Mode in Seattle right now, where they run a lot of zone, and then he loves to run that power inside. I think Turbin can develop as that angle or that power runner when you run a run lead open, but at the same time, I think he's going to be even more effective as a zone player. NFL teams now, no one's just a pure zone or a pure power scheme. You got to run both. And I think because of his body type and his comfort level running to the perimeter, he's going to be able to do both. I think he's probably going to run in that 4.55 range, and the backs that run fastest typically get drafted the higher. So I think, again, he's going to fall in that third, fourth round range, much like Sean Green, much like Marion Barber. But you're getting a heck of a value. And you talk about the injury concern. Had a good year. This will be year 2 removed from the ACL injury. Maybe gets a little more of that burst back. If he can stay healthy, you know, I think you have a heck of a running back, to be honest.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And again, it's a guy that's going to fall in the draft more than likely, unless he comes out gangbusters in the NFL Combine and really burns it up in terms of the 40. But as you said, he just doesn't possess that straight line speed. And I completely concur with your perspective on, you know, straight line speed being the most overrated commodity a player could own at the running back position. You know, you see just countless running backs over the course of NFL history who've been more or less plotters in terms of, you know, a 40-yard time, and they were very productive over a long period of time during illustrious careers. So I think Turbin's got a shot of being a real gem, and I'd love to see him in Denver, honestly, you know, with that that read option offense. You know, Willis McGahee getting up there in age, obviously. No Sean Moreno driving around as Bentley with sauce as a license plate, inebriated. I mean, there's a lot of issues there, but, you know, Turbin could come in a very conservative system, you know, very good offensive line, and I think he could be instantly productive in such a situation. And that, to me, seems like a good fit for him, and he could slide down. And I know Shanahan's not there, but it seems like Turbin would almost be like the ideal Shanahan, right?
Yeah, without a doubt. And I think worst-case scenario, you got a heck of a number two back that can give you all that he's worth, 5 to 10 carries a game year one. And if he, again, if he falls in the right situation or that starter goes down, you got a guy that can carry the ball 15 to 20 times a game. I think he's always going to be right around that 4.0 yard per carry margin, 3.8 to 4.2, somewhere in there, because he's not going to create a ton of big plays. But at the same time, he's a guy that I would trust to keep you ahead of the chains with those 3-4 yard carries early in the downs.
Yeah, kind of like a Michael Bush, really.
Yep.
You know, a very similar type of player, and really a kind of eerily similar situation. You know, Bush coming off major injury in college, he fell in the draft. He went, what, round four, I believe, back in 07. And it could be almost an identical carbon copy of Bush's situation, where you get a guy like Turbin, came off a major injury. Now, granted, he's a year removed from that, but will slip in the draft because of that durability concern, because he doesn't have the elite speed. But, you know, Bush, a guy that only averaged 3.8 yards per carry this season, but he was still a top eight fantasy back because he could do a little bit of everything, and he's a very powerful between the tackles grease man. So, yeah, it'll be fantastically interesting to see where Turbin ends up. He will slip, and I think he'll just be instantly competitive opening training camp with whoever he ends up with.
I like it, Brad. Tell the listeners of Draft Talk today all of the many places they can find you on the World Wide Web.
Yeah, so you can check us out, the entire Yahoo Sports fantasy team at fantasysports.yahoo.com. And, of course, on Twitter, I'm always tweeting about, you know, NCAA basketball stuff or Major League Baseball this time of year, and a little bit of football peppered in as well from time to time. And my handle is at Yahoo Noise.
There you go, Brad. Thanks a lot for joining me, man. I appreciate it.
All right, Wes, good luck to you, man. Make sure you get out and see the sunlight a little bit this time of year.
I'm going to try. And, you know, as soon as this podcast is done, I'll try to get out. But want to thank everyone for listening today to Draft Talk, Stallman 16.0. We'll be back every Tuesday night, 7 o'clock, with a new guest each week. Thanks for listening.